Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. We have all had our attention being pulled into the healthcare debates, into Congress, into what's happening regarding healthcare. We've been viscerally dragged in and out of the situation and very upset about what's going on both sides. But nobody in Congress has talked about health freedom. Health freedom has been totally missing from health care. And the fact that it's missing called me to invite some of the world's leaders and advocates of health freedom in the entire world. Ladies and gentlemen, I have invited the Natural Solutions Foundation's trustees, General Stubblebine, Dr. Rima LeBeau, Ralph Fusatola, to It's Rainmaking Time. Ralph Fusatola has been known as the vitamin lawyer, the advisor to countless natural companies, vitamin companies, medical practitioners who had breakthrough solutions to help bring them to the world and advise them properly about their rights and how they need to navigate treacherous waters, if you will. General Stubblebine has had a long-lasting work in the Army and has joined the health freedom movement, if you will. Rima LeBeau has been world-renowned to help bring us the translation and understanding of how critical our freedoms are, what it means, what is on the books internationally and legally, something called Codex Alimentarius, and the fact that we have to be on our toes and paying attention if we ever want to have a say about what we eat, if we ever want to have a say about the nutrients that go in our body. And all of them have joined to make sure that you're clear what's on the table in terms of your health freedom and your ability to select what foods you eat. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome everybody from the Natural Solutions Foundation to It's Rainmaking Time. Welcome everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. I want to say before Ralph begins with a very important piece of information and analysis, that we are the trustees of the Natural Solutions Foundation, and that our websites, our principal websites, are www.healthfreedomusa.org and www.globalhealthfreedom.org. And I want to take just one second to point out health freedom means that you own your body. You make the decisions about what happens to it, what food you put into it, the condition and nature of that food, whether you are vaccinated, whether you use natural health techniques and have access to them or not. And the word for people who do not have those freedoms is slave. Ralph?
Exactly, exactly. And I thought we would begin with a comment directed toward what Kim had started off by saying, and that is, do the people in Washington, do they really have any idea about health freedom? And the answer is, oh, yes, they know, and they're taking steps to restrict it. Good example, Congressman Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul, introduced an amendment to the Obamacare bill in the House of Representatives before it was passed. And all that amendment said was very simple. It said no person can be denied health care that's federally funded because they refuse to receive a mandatory vaccine or treatment. And the House of Representatives refused to protect our right to choice and our right not to be forced to be drugged. They would not put that clause in that law. And so we've set up what we call an action item because we've learned that pushback works, and that Washington responds to the citizens when we are loud enough and many enough. And so what we do on healthfreedomusa.org is we set up action items through our Health Freedom Action e-alert. You've got to go to the website and join the e-alert. It's critical. You'll receive emails that will have in them action items. You press your mouse, become a mouse warrior, press your mouse, send a message to your members of Congress, to your members of the state legislature. We had 2.8 million messages sent to federal and state legislators demanding that we not be forced to be vaccinated during the fake flu pandemic. And, of course, the government's plans to force all of us to be vaccinated evaporated. Same thing with the Obamacare law. We have an action item on our website specifically about that issue and telling the members of the Senate that if they're going to adopt a national health care law, that it has to include language to protect not just people from forced drugging, but also to protect alternatives, complementary treatments, what we call advanced health care, which is not part of the standard practice of medicine as controlled by the insurance industry. And so we want to be very clear that while we don't support nationalization of health care, we demand that if it's being nationalized, that clear protections be written into the law for people who have the right to choose their own method of health health advancement. And that's very clear. And we've done the same thing in the other major issue we want to talk about today, which is the fake food safety bill.
There's plenty to cover with this.
Right.
I want to go back and be clear with all of you for audiences that there was an amendment made legally to make sure that we as citizens of the United States, if a health care bill went through, had the opportunity to select the kind of care that we want and to reject care that we weren't aligned with, and that bill was denied.
Right.
Is that correct?
That amendment was denied. But further, what is included in the bill, as it is now going to be decided and tweaked behind closed doors in a profoundly anti-constitutional manner, what is in that bill is, for instance, that if you do not have full vaccination records, if you haven't been vaccinated with everything that the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, an industry rubber stamp organization, if ever there was one, with everything that they say you should be vaccinated with, whether you're an adult or a child, then what that means is that you will be denied all health care. Now, if that isn't tyranny, if that isn't bond slavery, if that isn't the ownership of your body, I don't know what is.
It is the ownership of your body.
Correct. So you must be vaccinated in order to have health care. You must have health care or pay a serious tax, which will not be considered to be a tax. I mean, this is crazy. This is the disenfranchisement of us from our own bodies.
How is it legally being adopted and left out of the conversation? In other words, why isn't Congress going through the chills reading this? Are these leaders in Congress not reading it? Do they not understand?
Leaders, or are they followers, Kim? I haven't seen any leadership coming out of Congress, except for a very few people, including Ron Paul. What I see is slavish attention to the wishes of the special interest groups, the corporations that own Congress. And it's going to get worse because of the Supreme Court's insane decision that although individuals have limits on the amount that they may contribute to campaigns for political office, corporations do not, because they have something absurdly offered to them called corporate personhood, which is a fiction that can destroy any shred left of a constitutional or republic-type government in this country. It is atrocious, beyond atrocious.
I've heard about your organization for a while, and I've heard you speak on Codex Alimentarius, which absolutely scared the heck out of me and has scared me for a long time. The thing is that when you start talking about laws and things that are brewing on the books, the average person says, what the heck can I do about it? I have nothing to do with that. The people in power are going to do what they're going to do. What do you say to that?
I say there is a dirty little secret in the practice of control, mass popular control, that's no one in power wants you to know. And I have that dirty little secret available to tell you and 100 million of your best friends. And that is, they want you to think that you're powerless. They want you to think that you're isolated. They want you to think that your opinion means nothing and you couldn't possibly wrap your poor little head around all these terribly complicated details. That's a complete deception. When we combine our voices and when we speak up and we use our computer mice to do that, we call the people who take action our mouse warriors. When we ride our mouse warriors into the battle for freedom, then guess what happens? The other side, whether it's Monsanto or whether it's GlaxoSmithKline or whether it's the CDC or the FDA or the WHO, they step back. If we raise our voices loud enough and speak truth clearly enough to power, corrupted as it may be, they step back and then they have to come back again, but we've gotten stronger and smarter. We are powerful enough to create pushback. Now it's time to create takedown. The reason that there is no mandatory vaccination in the United States for this fraudulent pandemic that was created in a laboratory and is designed to do many things, including end national sovereignty, believe it or not, and give world government to the World Health Organization. Yes, we have documentary evidence for that. The reason that there is no mandatory vaccination here is because we, the Natural Solutions Foundation, and its hundreds of thousands, millions of supporters, said, no way. You're not doing that to us. And they said, the federal government of the United States, having announced mandatory vaccination on July 24th and 25th of 2008, referring to avian flu, said, oh, did we say mandatory? We didn't mean that. No. Vaccination is voluntary. And that's a pushback triumph. Now it's time to go further because we're not just dealing with one issue. We're dealing with multiple issues, and they all have to be dealt with.
And speaking of multiple issues, this is what is frightening about this. It's multifaceted. It's like a jewel. It's multifaceted in scope. It's happening in parallel environments. So you have a pharmaceutical push. You have a food bill, you have Codex Alimentarius, you have laws that are on the books forcing people to not only buy the, quote, health care that they are architecting, but then you have this inability, once things are on the books, for people to make their own decisions and have their own dominion. And it's all happening simultaneously.
Exactly. And it's designed to wear us out, fatigue us, and confuse us. Well, guess what? We're too smart.
Let me jump in for just a second and,
is this
and
Bert?
Go back and review a couple of things that both Ralph and you talked about, Rima. First and foremost, one of the things that Kim, you mentioned, is how difficult it is to keep everything in perspective. There are so many issues. I mean, you enumerated them. You know, there's Codex, there's the food bill. You've got so many, many things on your plate. So how in the world do you keep yourself focused and moving in the right direction? Well, one of those things, and let me go back to my own experience, and that is obviously is spent my career as a military officer, 32 years of it to be exact. And one of the things you learn very, very quickly is that you must follow what we call principles of war. Well, that sounds strange because we're not in war. Oh, who said that? Who made that rule? Somebody has declared war on our bodies. So maybe we are, in fact, in a war, and the principles of war do, in fact, apply. We think they do. Okay. So let's think about them for a minute. You said, well, how in the world do you juggle all of these various things? Very simple. We've got an objective. That's one of the principles of war. You must know the path that you're on. You must keep yourself on that path. Well, the next piece that was mentioned was that there was a thing called pushback. What does pushback mean? It meant that there were, as Ralph said, 2.8 million people that called in and said, don't you dare do that. What is that called? It's called mass. It's a principle of war. We need mass in every one of these actions that we're taking. We'll enumerate the actions. Those actions will be keeping us on the objective, keeping us on the shining path. But each one of the separate actions must, and I reiterate and reiterate and reiterate, must have the people behind it. So we need your voices. Every one of your voices that becomes the 2.8 or the 10 million people that we need in order to make sure that pushback works, make sure that Congress listens, make sure that everybody is saying, whoa, there are a bunch of people out there that may not like what we're doing. Maybe we ought to back off. That's what MASS did. That's what the objective that we use to keep ourselves on that path. But we cannot do it alone. There is no way that Ralph and Rima and I can do this alone. We need all of your voices, every single one of them. And oh, by the way, we not only need your voices, we need your friends' voices and your friends' friends' voices and your friends' 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 voices. It needs to go viral. It's got to be like a spider web. It's got to spread and spread and spread. And the more voices that are heard on each one of these actions, the better the pushback.
I have a question for you, Major General Stubblebein, who has spent 32 years in the U.S. Army. And I understand that you were a commanding general for the U.S. Army's Intelligence School and Center and helped define the requirements of the U.S. Army for future conflict. So you know what you're talking about. But here's the distinction between defense and offense. As a strategist, it looks to me like everything you're saying is true in terms of defense. But what is the touchdown for health freedom? And how do we vision health freedom happening so that people of the United States and people of the world are not dealing with this matter 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now? What can happen besides the pushback? Because eventually, we have to vision beyond a pushback, right? The agencies that do this are never going to stop. From Monsanto going to the Patent and Trademark Office and patenting the molecular structure of seeds, it never ends.
Well, of course it never ends, not until we destroy these organisms. However, we are the Natural Solutions Foundation conceived of and initiated a lawsuit against the FDA, CDC, Secretary Sebelius, et cetera, in order to prevent not only the H1N1 vaccine from being deployed, but also every influenza vaccine. We are striving to use U.S. law to make it clear that these vaccines are completely illegal. We are also suing the FTC to compel them to prevent any advertising which says or which implies that vaccines are either safe or effective or both, because they are neither. They are not safe, they are not effective, and they've never been shown to be any of those. They have been shown to be quite dangerous. That's offense. That's taking down the structure that they have set up. Another offense is market. We are creating vigorous markets, and we are protecting the companies that create the wellness products that we rely upon. For instance, Ralph, you probably want to talk about the clinical trials company so that these companies can survive the latest marauding depredation of the FTC and the FDA, which is designed to put them out of business. We have numerous offensive, and of course these agencies would say very offensive, strategies which accompany the defense against all the things that they keep sending out, like poisonous feelers. Ralph, you want to
talk? Wait a minute. Before Ralph does that, there's one other piece in response to Kim's comments just recently about there's all of these different places to go. Well, yes, you must be flexible, and you must counter each one of the new pieces that is thrown at you. It's called, principle of war, maneuver. You must be able to maneuver around and take advantage of what the enemy does or doesn't do, find his weakness, and move forward. So, again, you're back to one of the key principles of war, and it's just called maneuver. And it answers, essentially, from my perspective, answers your question or your comment, Kim. Okay, now, Ralph.
All right, let's give the people some resources to get information.
I need you to speak up, Ralph. Ralph, I need you to speak up and louder.
All right, a couple of good websites.
Very good.
Help you find information about some of these issues. Number one, as Dr. Labo said, we're working on a natural clinical trials program, and the website for that is easy. It's www.naturalclinicaltrials.org. Good website. If you've got a small vitamin company, you need to go there. If you've got a small natural product company, you need to go there. If you've got a big company, you need to go there. Naturalclinicaltrials.org. Another very helpful website for you is our Food Freedom e-journal. It's an e-journal that's filled with videos on practical information on how to grow your own beyond organic, biodynamic food. And that was videotaped a number of months ago at the Natural Solutions Center in the highlands of Panama, where General Burt and Dr. Rima live. It's excellent, 105 minutes of really good video. That's www.foodfreedomjournal.org. And, of course, our main website is healthfreedomusa.org, where you'll find links to all of that stuff. But I think that these things link into useful information.
And then to
the food safety issue at some point along the way, because we need to talk about one of the other major assaults, which is a law pending in the U.S. Senate, which is S-510. And we also need to talk about, remainder of our time, that major international assault on our health freedom, namely Codex Alimentarius.
Let's start with the U.S. food bill, can we?
Sure. There was a bill introduced a number of months ago in the House of Representatives. We made our views on that bill well known to the people in the House. They did pass it, but they added to it some language that was a little protective. This basically is a bill that industrializes all food production. It forces family farms and ranches, community gardens, farmers markets, and all the rest into the same mold as the giant corporate big agri, a mold that is obviously not meant to fit those local and natural producers, and it will destroy them.
How?
Well, by mandating, for example, very expensive seed sorting equipment, which will make it almost impossible for heritage seed companies to continue in operation. But the big guys like Monsanto, Forbes is business of the year, in fact, they'll be okay. It's a big barrier against entry. It's almost the Monsanto monopoly guarantee law.
Let me just interject something there, Ralph. People who are not farmers don't understand that seed saving is absolutely essential to independent farming. Farmers save their best plants, let them grow the seed, and then they replant the next year with that seed. The equipment can cost as little as $40. There's never been a case of contamination or terrorism or problem of any kind from seed that's sorted this ancient way. But in order to meet the requirements of this bill, a farmer would have to have a factory that costs between $1 million and $1.5 million for each type of seed he grows, one for corn, one for soy, one for alfalfa, one for broccoli, one for carrots, and little farmers who are marginal economically anyway will be criminalized just by the seed saving requirements. Monsanto wishes to make seed saving illegal on a global basis so that the only seeds that can be accessed are from Monsanto.
GMO seeds from Monsanto.
GMO seeds from Monsanto. This is just one tiny provision of this monstrous Monsanto dream bill.
And Monsanto is really in the business of globalizing and owning the molecular structure of seeds.
And of animals. Monsanto owns the pig. Every pig on the planet is Monsanto's legal genetic property because of a court decision about 3 years ago. An insane court decision, by the way. So we're talking about changing the law in the United States and elsewhere to make the growing of clean food, you know, your tomatoes in your garden or your chives on your windowsill, a criminal act. And therefore, by teaching people how to grow their own food in tiny spaces, for instance, a 4-foot by 4-foot garden in your closet under a grow light if necessary, can supply your family of 4 people with all of the vegetables you need on an ongoing permanent basis at virtually no cost. But that is soon to become a highly political act. And producing your own food so that you can stay healthy and you don't have to buy genetically altered, damaged, codex poisoned food is a political act. It is takedown.
Talk about Codex Alimentarius. Describe it for us, please.
Before I do that, Ralph, did I short circuit your...
Not at all. I just want to point out to people that there is on our homepage in the Actions to Take section a place for you to click on and send a message to your senators when about this bill that's now pending in the Senate, S-510. When that bill was marked up, as they say, in front of the HELP Committee, which is the Senate committee, back in December, you can go to their website and actually watch the video. Senator Tom Harkin had to begin by saying that they had received a few thousand emails over the weekend. Actually, it was 150,000 emails that we generated, right? A few thousand emails, and he wanted to assure everyone that that what we call DSHEA, the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994, the law that gives us the right to speak freely about nutrients, or somewhat freely, that law is still governed in the United States, not Codex. He wanted to make that clear to the public. And the fact that they were in the law, they're going to ask the FDA to recommend to Congress how to harmonize with Codex and other international regulations does not mean that Congress isn't going to support DSHEA. Well, he's responding directly to our pushback. And the truth of the matter is, that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to get around the law, which was passed unanimously by Congress, which allows us to speak more or less freely about nutrients.
And have access more to nutrients,
right.
Not just speak about them, but have access to them.
Right. And basically, that's what's at risk in this new law. In addition to the fact that the so-called food safety provisions are designed to destroy independent food producers.
Let me orient people to Codex Alimentarius, which sounds like an intestinal parasite.
It definitely does. And I hope I don't have it.
Oh, well, we do have it, and we need to cure it. And this is one that wormwood will not...
You may need an antibiotic for it.
Yes, indeed. Now, speaking of antibiotic, the universal antibiotic is nanosilver, not colloidal silver, but nanosilver. Nanosilver could completely eliminate the entire antibiotic market. 90% of the antibiotics sold worldwide by Big Pharma are sold in the animal raising industry to keep the animals alive in the inhuman food factory environments to which they're subjected. So antibiotics are an enormous business, not just for people, but 9 times more for animals. Antibiotics would be completely eliminated if we started using safe, cheap, available nanosilver. So the European Food Supplements Directive on January 1st, 2010, banned the sale of nanosilver in Europe totally and completely.
Frightening.
Last week on our Health Freedom Radio, which is available at www.thefreedomlink.org, thefreedomlink.org, and we broadcast every Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. Last week, our guest was Dr. Sarah Schoens, a board-certified immunologist who practices advanced natural medicine in Germany, who was talking about the fact that all high-potency supplements and homeopathic remedies, although they're manufactured in Germany, are becoming illegal substances with or without a prescription in the European Union. Now, the United States FDA said on October 11th, 1994, that it was going to harmonize, and I suggest you capitalize the first four letters when you listen to that, that it was going to harmonize with international standards, including Codex Alimentarius. So, Codex Alimentarius, what is it? It's a United Nations commission that was initiated at the request of the pharmaceutical executives who had just gotten out of jail for their crimes against humanity in Germany following the Nuremberg War Tribunal. They went back to work when they got out of jail in less than 4 years, having created the German concentration camps and the slave labor camps and the experimentation on human beings, selling human beings for those experiments and so on, creating the Zyklon B gas. And by the way, let no one tell you that the Holocaust did not happen. It did. So they got out of jail, they went back to work, and they got together and they said, hey, we all know that healthy food makes healthy people. Healthy people are wretched customers for the pharmaceutical industry. Let's go to the United Nations and ask them to take over the world food trade. And the United Nations said, okay, and they created the Codex Alimentarius, the World Food Code, in 1962. It began working in 1963 to set standards and guidelines for everything that goes into your mouth legally, whether it's water or broccoli or nut milk or fish. Everything is covered by Codex Alimentarius standards and guidelines. Who drives this choo-choo train? Well, it's administered jointly by the World Health Organization. WHO receives more than two-thirds of its funding from the pharmaceutical industry and is a private corporation exactly like the Fed. And its partner in administering it is the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, also a private corporation. I don't know where its funding comes from, but I'll bet you it's big agribiz. I'm quite certain of that. So these two organizations fund and administer this international organization, which countries attend, and there's a codex meeting somewhere on some topic every week around the world, around the year. Small countries, poor countries cannot afford to attend, but the United States attends every single meeting, and in fact, the United States is the dominant dog. Who is calling the shots for that dominant dog at Codex? You get it. Big pharma, big agribiz, big biotech, big chema, and big medica. How do I know that? Well, the United States, unique in any country that attends Codex, actually has representatives from those industries sitting on its delegations. No other country in the world does that. And so the United States, using its enormous propaganda advantage, because countries around the world, incredibly enough, think we have the best medical care in the world, which of course we don't, think we have the best health in the world, which of course we tragically do not, and think we have the best food and food supply in the world, which is an absurdity, since our food, our denatured, contaminated, devitalized, demineralized, and poisoned food and irradiated food is killing us. So they've bought into this carefully managed propaganda, and they tend to go along and say, well, whatever the United States says must be good because, after all, everything they do is science-based. Oh, come now. We know better. Now, the Natural Solutions Foundation attends Codex meetings. We also visit with the poorest countries in the world, and we meet with their leaders. We meet with their ministers of agriculture. We meet with their ministers of health, and we tell them, your people are going to die from Codex Alimentarius before other people do. And they say, we know. But if we don't go along with them, we'll be hit by World Trade Organization sanctions that will destroy our fragile economy. And we say, nope, no you won't. Here's what you do. And we pull out the book that we wrote, which you can download on our website, www.healthfreedom.org. healthfreedomusa.org.
What's it called? What's the book
called?
It's called
the Codex eBook, and it is an example of how any country in the world can deviate from any codex standard or guideline without being hit by World Trade Organization sanctions if their deviation is in the direction of better, safer, more nutritious, less chemical, toxic food. And you can also download or purchase the lecture called Nutricide, N-U-T-R-I-C-I-D-E, which tells you much more about the origin of this depopulation effort. You have to remember it came, Codex Alimentarius was created by the genocidal Nazi heads of IG Farben, which was essentially a pharmaceutical and chemical industry combine which supported the ability of the German government to make war in Europe. And those people did not give up their genocidal ideas just because they went to jail and got out of jail. They decided that along with the World Health Organization, which formally and specifically says that a sustainable planet requires 90% of the world's population to be eliminated. That's what
is that verifiable, Doctor? Is that verifiable somewhere?
Yes, ma'am. It
how?
Is verifiable. You can go online and you can read how the World Health Organization defines a sustainable planet. It's a planet that has approximately 500 million people on it.
Is that what's called Agenda 21?
That's part of Agenda 21. I was informed of this, along with General Stubblebine, by a patient of ours who was the head of state in 2002 and 2003, who told us it is almost time, she said, for the great culling, C-U-L-L-I-N-G, culling to begin. And we said, what are you talking about? She said, you know, getting rid of the useless eaters. We said, the what? The who? And she said, the useless eaters. I said, who are useless eaters? She said, all the people who are consuming our non-renewable natural resources. And I said, did it ever occur to you that you are consuming their non-renewable natural resources? And she said, well, that's an interesting way to look at it. No, I never thought of that.
That's pretty chilling.
So I did research, and I went to the source of the term useless eaters. It was a term of art in Germany introduced by two professors in 1922 to justify the killing of anyone who didn't contribute to the state, which was an idea introduced into Germany by John D. Rockefeller, who set up the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute long before the Nazis ever thought of coming to power. And John D. Rockefeller, interestingly, had by that time bought controlling interests in the entire pharmaceutical and chemical industries. He believed in culling the population to a much, much, much smaller size and getting rid of the useless eaters. The pharmaceutical industry produces the drugs that are the leading cause of death, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, the British Medical Journal, and Lancet, the leading cause of death in the developed world. Every year, hundreds of thousands of people die from properly used pharmaceuticals. That can't be a mistake. So we're talking about food and drugs all being controlled by the pharmaceutical industry for profit, for continued illness, and for death. I'd like to, before I stop, because other people have a lot to say, I'd like to remind you that in 2003, the FAO and WHO, the organizations that fund and run Codex, put out a joint book, that's a jointly authored book, on diet, exercise, and chronic illness. And they pointed out that there are five principal, non-communicable, epidemic preventable diseases of undernutrition: cancer, cardiovascular disease, stroke, diabetes, and obesity. These five non-communicable preventable diseases of undernutrition are the five top money makers of the pharmaceutical and illness industry, and they are also what will result, according to their to the WHO and FAO predictions, when Codex mandates undernutrition on a global basis.
One of the things that struck me as frightening as I watch television, which I'm paying attention more and more to the advertisements, I usually turn it off, but I've never seen so many pharmaceutical ads in my life. It is full-scale hypnosis.
Absolutely. And they're very beautifully constructed and carefully paced, and the prattle about all the side effects that runs across the bottom.
It's like comedy.
It is. It is indeed like comedy. It is actually presented at a frequency range and a pacing rhythm that prevents you from remembering any of it.
But it's somewhere.
I actually testified at FDA hearings on precisely this subject, on the direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals. And the testimony was presented that made it very clear that this was very, very carefully crafted. And the representatives of the pharmaceutical industry acknowledged that this part of the ad was designed to be unretrievable.
You know what? There's an actual science, a neuroscience, that's used in advertising. I'm doing a special piece on it, that actually bypasses the conscious brain.
Correct.
And
Correct.
Implants the content into the subconscious in such a way as to get it to make the buying decision.
Exactly.
Is that frightening or what?
Neuromarketing. Well, you know, you are more susceptible to this when you have fluoride in your body. Fluoride is a substance which is a known neurotoxin and endocrine poison. It does, in fact, not protect your teeth or your bones. It leads to damage to your teeth and bones. And it was used first by Joseph Stalin to control the political prisoners in his gulags, and then the Nazis learned about it and used it in the concentration camps and the slave labor camps. And then toward the end of the war, when the German people became aware that they weren't winning this war, that they were supposed to win so easily, the whole population was fluoridated. Why? Because it makes people complacent. You can do anything you want with them. Then the fluoridation scientists, among many, many other scientists, were brought to the United States, and in totally bogus studies in Newburgh, New York, and Salt Lake City, it was found that the children who were experimented upon, children experimented upon? That sounds rather nazified, doesn't it? The children who were experimented upon actually had more cancer, more tooth decay, more bone breaks, more diabetes than the children who didn't receive fluoride, and yet the findings were published with the headings switched. About 6 years ago, the FDA reviewed the documents again, the original research, and acknowledged in writing that the headings had been switched, so the conclusions were completely wrong, but continued to support fluoridation of all water supplies. In Europe, this past March, the European Union ended the practice of fluoridating water because the health problems are so serious. But we have it sprayed on our food. We have it in our water supplies. And, frighteningly, we have the Codex nutrient reference values, which are the levels to which people are to have their nutrients go, but no higher, and they're shamefully inadequate, except for fluoride, which can be taken in at 4 milligrams per day. This is an incredibly toxic dose. Everything else is so low as to have no effect on any human being, by intention, stated in the Codex documents. But fluoride, that's a different story. So part of the reason that people are able to be controlled by neuromarketing is because their neurological systems are damaged by fluoride. Well,
you know,
by accident.
Doctor, the fluoride is in most of the toothpaste still. Even in the health food stores, there's still a lot of fluoridated toothpaste.
Yes, there
is. And it's in the water when we wash our food. California was mandated years ago. They had to put fluoride in the water. The Dental Association lobbied for it being in the water. Why?
The Dental Association has been propagandized and misled the same way the medical associations have been. Doctors are actually duped into thinking, and I survived medical school. I know that it's a brainwashing cult activity, and it's designed through emotional intimidation, sleep deprivation, protein deprivation, and a hierarchical structure of abuse to get people to buy into the system mindlessly and abuse those coming up below them to inculcate them into the system. But, and the Dental Association is no different. But the fact is that we can protect ourselves. There are filters that will take out most of the fluoride. We can also make sure that we read labels very carefully, and it's not always easy. When we were last in the United States, we ran out of toothpaste. We went to a large health food store, and the word fluoride was buried so deeply in the label that although it said natural, natural, organic, organic, when I got it back to the hotel, I saw that it had fluoride in it, and I threw it out. So you have to be vigilant, and you have to make sure that you're protecting yourself from fluoride. And by the way, many psychiatric drugs are primarily fluoride.
What does that mean? They're coated with fluoride, or that's...
Oh, that the compound that causes calming, let's say, in agitation, or masks the symptoms of depression by taking away the vitality of people's emotions, these are all fluoride compounds. Not all. These are many of them, fluoride compounds. And so they poison the brain on a long-term basis. And, oh, by the way, the longest-term studies for psychiatric drugs in children are 13 weeks.
What does that mean? It's short, correct?
It means that you give something to a kid on an experimental basis for 13 weeks, and then you keep the kid on that substance for the rest of their lives without any knowledge of what it does to their developing brain structure or to their endocrine system or to the neurotransmitters are found everywhere in the body. One of the reasons that people who take antidepressants, serotonin reuptake inhibitors or SSRIs, get osteoporosis, including children, is that Mother Nature is very conservative, and so the same enzymes that process serotonin in the brain are present at the surface of the brain, of the bone, and in the gut and elsewhere. And so when you poison those enzyme systems, you get changes in every part of the body. None of that's ever been studied properly. These things are, the drugs are tremendously toxic. Nutrients and herbs are not toxic in the same way. And it's almost impossible to kill yourself with vitamin C, for instance, but they're the principal economic competitors of drugs. And food is another principal economic competitor of drugs because healthy people don't need drugs. Healthy people eat healthy food. Poison the food, keep the market going, depopulate the planet. Real simple.
I think for a lot of people, if they could go all the way through what you're all saying, right up to the depopulate the planet part.
Okay.
Just because the average person could...
A famous memo written by Henry Kissinger in 1972 to Richard Nixon, in which he said that population reduction has to be the central element in U.S. foreign policy. This has been around for a while.
Right. No, I know it's been around for a while. I'm more speaking from the audience perception.
Here's my response, Kim.
Yeah.
At that point, when people say, well, I buy everything you've said, but no, the depopulation part can't be true, which, of course, is an emotional response, not a rational one, but
exactly.
We're all entitled to our emotions.
Sure.
I say, okay, skip that part. Assume everything else I've said is correct, because you can buy it, it's correct. And now skip that part and say, okay, she's wrong about that. Everything I've said is the same in terms of what it means for you. It means taking control of your health, taking control of your food, not buying genetically modified food. Oh, by the way, how would you know? Well, if it comes in a plastic wrapper or it's been processed, it's genetically modified. If it has high fructose corn syrup, if it has modified food starch, if it has any of the things that are made from corn, and that's a huge number of elements of our food, including so-called natural flavors, it comes from genetically modified plants. If you're eating anything with soy that doesn't say organic, it is genetically modified. If you're eating anything with canola oil that doesn't say organic, it is genetically modified. Genetically modified foods are known to cause problems in organs, autoimmune problems, infertility, and cancer. I wouldn't want to eat them.
You know, I shop at Whole Foods, and I also shop at Trader Joe's here in Los Angeles. And when I go into Trader Joe's, I'm often worried and find myself looking at the fruit and vegetable section because I really don't know, even though it says organic and some of them don't say organic, is it GMO?
Well, you can tell with the fruits and vegetables very, very easily, Kim. There are little oval stickers, the PUL labels. Now, if an oval sticker has a code on it that begins with the number 4, it is conventionally grown. It's got pesticides and herbicides and fungicides, and it's probably been irradiated. If it starts with the number 8, it is genetically modified, like papayas and mangoes and God knows how many fruits and vegetables have been genetically modified. If it has a number 9, it is organic, certified organic. Now, organic is a declining standard, but it's a whole lot better than 4, and it's infinitely better than 8. The problem is when you're not dealing with fruits and vegetables and you don't have a little oval sticker. In 1992, the scientifically illiterate then president of the United States, George Herbert Walker Bush, senior, the senior Bush president, declared that genetically modified foods are to be considered substantially equivalent to non-genetically modified foods, which of course makes no sense. If you can patent it, it's not substantially equivalent to unpatentable foods. And that it was not to be permitted to allow GMO foods to be labeled.
What?
You got it.
Right. It's illegal to tell the truth.
And
are you telling me you can't label GMO foods anywhere?
Well, it violates U.S. case law. It violates U.S. case law, but it is the position the FDA has taken.
In fact, we were at a Codex meeting on this very topic in Oslo. General Stubblebine and I were there, as a matter of fact, on his birthday, February 6th, and we were stunned, as was the rest of the world. Most of the world requires labeling of GMO, by the way. We were stunned to hear the United States finally admit why they feel that GMO should never be labeled. And Barbara Schneeman, who is the head of the Dietary Supplements Division of the FDA and a very frequent Codex delegate for the U.S., said, well, U.S. consumers overwhelmingly reject GMO food, but administratively, GMO foods are identical to non-GMO foods, and therefore, in order to prevent the consumer from making the mistake of rejecting something that is administratively identical, the FDA prohibits the identification of GMO food.
That's absolutely criminal.
The room
went silent.
Nobody could speak. I mean, people were sitting there around this huge table with their mouths agape.
It was dumbfounding.
Dumbfounded. And finally, the delegate from the EU said, that's weird.
That's the closest the EU ever came to objecting to any part of the globalist agenda.
It's exactly. Monstrous, actually. It's literally Frankenstein.
It also violates U.S. case law, and it violates the U.S. Constitution. Other than that, there's no problemo.
Well, there's obviously something that Monsanto wants, because to patent the molecular structure of seeds and take over and license seeds all over the world. There is an agenda.
And animals. It's not just seeds. It's Monsanto said 20 years ago that they would own the world's food supply by 2010.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, indeed. Now, Monsanto has just been named Company of the Year by Forbes, the capitalist tool. And I wrote to them, I wrote a letter in which I said that they were not the capitalist tool, they were the globalist's fool.
Right. What they did was, in addition to naming Monsanto, they actually came out in an article, which is what Dr. Labo was responding to, where they basically accused people who don't want to accept forced vaccination of being vaccine deniers.
Oh, vaccine deniers. And they said that we were endangering everybody else. And, of course, this makes no sense. There's no such thing as herd immunity. And, oh, by the way, I want your listeners to understand that I'm a scientist. I'm a passionate advocate of health freedom, but I am a scientist to my core. And I will tell you, as a scientist, that the entire area of vaccines is nothing but a medical fraud. There's so much money involved in vaccinations and vaccines that fraud has been propagandized magnificently. But the fact is that a placebo-controlled, double-blind trial of vaccinated versus unvaccinated persons, children or adults, has never been conducted. There is not the tiniest shred of evidence that the antibodies produced after a vaccination are protective. In fact, there is an epidemiologist whose article this is a PhD epidemiologist from the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Moroni, if I remember correctly, who says that you can predict epidemics and pandemics by simply identifying vaccine campaigns.
It's frightening. Absolutely frightening. I have a question about pasteurization, not to get off the vaccine subject. There's so much. I mean, we could do another hour on vaccines, and if there's anything else you want to say about that, please do. But then I just want to ask you about pasteurization, because this is another thing that's disturbing to our food supply. Milk is pasteurized. Almonds are pasteurized. People are forced to pasteurize these foods. Can you explain what it is to the public, what it does to the food?
I'd be very happy to. First, let's start with the thing that usually goes along with pasteurization if it's a liquid, and that is homogenization of milk. Homogenization is designed to save you the labor, the effort, the work of shaking up a bottle of milk. Now, that homogenization breaks the fat up into tiny little globules, and the globules lodge in your body, and they poison your body. The globules are found in the center of the plaques in coronary disease. The globules are found in damaged areas of your liver. Homogenized milk is a health hazard of enormous magnitude. Forget the fact that milk that has recombinant bovine growth hormone, that has antibiotics, that has other drugs in it, is an enormous health hazard. Part of the reason that milk is pasteurized is to prevent you from being sickened by the pus or by the bacteria that have led to the pus in the milk, because sick cows raised under factory farm conditions have infections, chronic infections, and also to prevent you from being sickened by the other infective material in the milk, specifically, I'm sorry to say, from the diarrhea that factory farm cows have on a regular basis. Ick, ick, ick. So they heat milk for a few seconds to about 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's supposed to kill the pathogens. There are a couple of problems. First of all, by doing that, you kill off the beneficial bacteria. And when you kill the beneficial bacteria and especially when you've homogenized it, you've turned milk into a major junk drink. So you've got chemicals in it, you've got all of the good bacteria knocked out by the temperature treatment, which is what pasteurization is, and now you have a little problem, because when cows are given recombinant bovine growth hormone, or Prosilac, which they can be in the United States, unlabeled, of course, they develop terrible, terrible mastitis or infections of their udders. When they are milked, they have enormous levels of infective bacteria, but they also develop chronic running diarrhea, so much so that the FDA, when Prosilac became a common product, the FDA had to increase the contamination that was permitted from both the mastitis and the diarrhea by a huge amount, or there wouldn't have been any commercial milk available in the United States. So instead of holding to the standards, they just lowered the standards and made the milk legal. Now, when you pasteurize milk at about 75 degrees Fahrenheit for just a few seconds, it varies from between 45 to 90 seconds, you kill the beneficial bacteria. You kill a few of the other bacteria, but you do not kill the the pseudotuberculinum bacterium. It doesn't cause tuberculosis, but it looks like a tuberculous bacillus. So the pseudotuberculinum bacteria is not killed. What difference does it make? Well, milk is drunk primarily by children. And when children drink milk and the pseudotuberculinum organism takes hold, they develop a disease which 20 or 30 years ago was virtually unknown in children. It's called Crohn's disease. There is an epidemic of Crohn's disease. It's a painful inflammation of the small intestine, which is where virtually all of the absorption of the nutrients of the body takes place. You don't absorb them through your stomach. You don't absorb them through your large intestine. You absorb them through your small intestine. The absorptive mechanism of the small intestine becomes inflamed and then is destroyed. So you get small, malnourished children in constant pain. Then they're put on steroids and their bones are destroyed through osteoporosis. So you have small children with weak bones who are ill all of their lives. And then there are other medications and other medications. It's great business. Who makes Prosilac? Well, Prosilac was developed and was presented to the world and marketed by Monsanto, Forbes magazine's company of the year.
Monsanto, I think their either VP or legal counsel went to work for Obama. Did you know that?
Yes. Michael Taylor.
What's his name?
Michael Taylor.
What the heck is he doing on the Obama team?
In charge of our food safety, among other things.
Well, Kim, it sounds as if you think Obama is on the side of freedom.
Actually, I don't think that at all. I see very clearly what's unfolding. And it's not a question of party for me. I see very clearly, and that's how I know what I just said to you. It's for people that are hypnotized by any administration, name, title, or propaganda. It's really who's on board what and who's coming out of where and who's doing what. If the legal counsel for Monsanto is on Obama's team.
It's not just the legal counsel, Kim.
Oh, I know. It's the whole caboodle.
The food czar. The food safety czar, Monsanto, the USDA, the head of the USDA, Vilsack, former governor of Iowa, Monsanto, the Michael Taylor, whom we just spoke about, Monsanto. There's no end to the penetration of the big pharma, big agribiz, big biotechnet, big chema, people, big medica, people in this administration and in every other administration. Cynicism and activation would be the order of the day. Cynicism without activation is worthless. But we have a chance to take back our food and take back our freedom. The place to start is actually food, because we all eat.
I'm in shock on a part of what you're saying relative to Monsanto being able to own animals, the right to have a farm, the right to grow food. In other words, they have patent or licensed animals, seeds, the molecular structure of seeds. When I heard that, I thought that was totally fascist.
And that's why food freedom is as important as health freedom, and that's why people need to go to www.healthfreedomusa.org and join the Health Freedom e-alert list, because it's not just about health freedom, it's about food, it's about freedom in other ways as well. And we're so grateful for you to letting us on your show and letting us talk about these issues.
Well, and oh, by the way, that's the reason we've come down here to Panama and are developing programs to teach people how to recover their food.
If you go to a website for that one, too, and that website is International Decade of Nutrition. Long, but it's one word, www, International Decade of Nutrition.org, and you'll find out a lot about what's going on at the Valley of the Moon project in Panama.
And how you can participate in it, because Valley of the Moon project is an open project where people can come and live, where people can come and participate. We are literally reclaiming the production of food. And oh, by the way, the government of Panama is asking us to help create a clean country with out chemical agriculture, without chemical animal practices. And that is a model for the rest of the world.
I love it. I love what you're doing, and I can't wait to come to Panama to bring
it. What you can have right now, even before you think about coming to Panama, and you're invited. Come on down, Kim, and come on down the rest of you. But before that, you can have our first Friendly Food Certified product. You see, a Friendly Food Certified product is one that is friendly to the worker, friendly to the environment, and friendly to the consumer. When we got here, we learned that coffee was a horrible mix of fungicide and pesticide and herbicide, all of them horrible chemicals derived from nerve gas, by the way, which was sprayed on the crop without limit. There was no end to the amount that was put on. Even organic coffee has things like glyphosate on it, because they have a green band around the bottle, and so the farmer thinks that they're okay to use. They're incredibly poisonous. So we decided that we would handle the problem of the fungus that farmers use just devastating fungicides for, in the same way that I, as a physician practicing natural medicine for almost 40 years without using any drugs, would treat somebody who had a fungal overgrowth. I would give them beneficial bacteria and the proper nutrition, and shazam, the problem was gone. So we bought a very, very, very damaged, abandoned coffee farm, or finca, as they say in Spanish. And that coffee farm had incredible amounts of this fungus, Mycenae tricolor, or ojo de gallo.
Ojo de gallo, eye of the rooster.
Eye of the rooster. And so any year, by spraying beneficial bacteria and nutrients on the leaves of the plants, and by putting compost, 10-ingredient compost, organic, of course, on the roots of the plant, we created an incredibly healthy coffee farm that has produced the most magnificent coffee you have ever tasted, free of any kind of toxic chemical. It's called Valley of the Moon Coffee.
I'd love to make it available, and somehow make it available on the site for people to buy it, and also to buy it from your site, obviously. But wow,
absolutely,
I'd love to try it.
We can do that. If we can talk about that off air, Kim, because
absolutely,
it's available in the U.S. and it supports the foundation, valleyofthemooncoffee.org. I promise you, you've never tasted better coffee in your life.
I'm looking forward to it. I am a coffee drinker. I am a tea drinker, and I look forward to it.
love this.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to the founders of the Natural Solutions Foundation, the trustees, Dr. Rima LeBeau, Ralph Fusitola, Major Bert Stubblebine, and we have learned what is happening in the world today, that we are not powerless, but there are things we have to pay attention to and act on to make sure that we have our health freedoms and food freedoms. And I really want to thank you all for being my guest today. It's not easy to hear what you shared today. It's not even easy, since I've been aware of it for years, to hear it all synthesized together, but it's very important for the public, both in the United States and outside, to understand what's on the table of concern for humanity and for animals. And I thank you so much.
It has been our pleasure. Thank you. www.healthfreedomusa.org.
Protecting all of your freedoms.
It's rainmaking time, everybody.